Jamie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. York, this is Democracy Now!
Dealing with everything we had to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
He's willing to, as we say, rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month and kill the baby.
The first presidential debate of 2024. President Biden versus former President Trump. It marked the first time a sitting president debated a former one. We'll play excerpts.
Having sex with a porn star on the night while your wife is pregnant. I mean, what are you talking about? You have the morals of an alley cat.
I didn't have sex with a porn star.
We'll host a roundtable on the topics that were brought up. The economy, immigration, reproductive rights, foreign policy.
The only one who wants to keep going is Hamas. Actually, Israel is the one. And you should let him go and let him finish the job. He doesn't want to do it. He's become like a Palestinian, but they don't like him because he's a very bad Palestinian. He's a weak one.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the Gaza Strip, at least 11 Palestinians were killed and 40 others wounded today when Israeli forces bombed Al-Mawasi, an area sheltering displaced families near Gaza's southern city of Rafah. Separately, Gaza's Civil Defense Agency said three of its medics were killed and a dozen others wounded by Israeli airstrikes as they searched for survivors of Israel's assault on the Bereij refugee camp. The attack on medical workers came as Israeli authorities continue to bar many Palestinians from leaving Gaza to seek medical treatment. This is Kamela Abu Quaik, mother to five-year-old Fayez, who urgently needs treatment for cancer after lumps spread throughout his body. On Thursday, the boy finally granted permission to leave Gaza for treatment in Egypt, but his parents were not allowed to travel with him.
Why is there suffering like this? Are people's hearts blind? Are they blind or deaf that they don't hear or see? Have they lost their feelings? Is it okay for them to see us suffering like this? Do they not feel for these children? Malnourishment, lack of food, no capabilities, no treatments, no medication. There's no milk. There's nothing. There's nothing. Do they want to kill us slowly? Why?
The Biden administration's defending the pace of its arms shipments to Israel after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accused the U.S. of slow-rolling military assistance. This week, the White House boasted it supplied Israel with $6.5 billion in military aid since last October. The disclosure came as senior U.S. officials held talks with an Israel delegation headed by Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, who on Wednesday told reporters in Washington, D.C., Israel's prepared to bomb Lebanon, quote, back to the Stone Age, unquote, unless Hezbollah halts cross-border attacks. On Wednesday, Gallant was confronted by a peace activist with code pink after meeting with key members of Congress on Capitol Hill.
Gallant, you are a war criminal! How dare you enter our city and our country! You are a war criminal! You have literally killed thousands of Palestinians carrying out the genocide in Palestine! Shame on you, and shame on you for letting them in here! Shame on all of you for protecting a war criminal!
In more news from Capitol Hill, lawmakers have barred the U.S. State Department from citing death toll figures provided by Gaza Ministry of Health ahead of Thursday's vote. Congress's lone Palestinian-American lawmaker, Democrat Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, read into the congressional record the toll of Palestinians killed during Israel's assault on Gaza, more than 37,700 dead, 15,000 of them children.
But Palestinians are not just numbers. Behind these numbers are real people, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, who have had their lives stolen from them and their families torn apart. And we should not be trying to hide it. These are innocent children and babies who have been bombed in their tents, burned alive, dismembered, and deliberately starved to death. Where is our shared humanity in this chamber? There is so much anti-Palestinian racism in this chamber that my colleagues don't even want to acknowledge that Palestinians exist at all. Not when they're alive, and now not even when they're dead. It's absolutely disgusting. This is genocide denial.
President Biden and former President Trump took to the stage Thursday night for their first debate of the 2024 election, hosted by CNN at its Atlanta headquarters. Over the 90-minute debate, Trump repeatedly lied, referenced misinformation as he blasted Biden's immigration policies, inaccurately linking asylum seekers and immigrants to rising crime. Trump also falsely asserted Democrats have advocated for abortion legislation that would allow doctors to kill newborn babies. CNN moderators Jake Tapper and Dan Bash failed to challenge or fact-check Trump during the debate. President Biden was halting and disjointed, muffled his lines, often appeared to lose his train of thought. We'll play excerpts of the debate and get commentary for the rest of the broadcast after headlines. The United States Supreme Court has rejected a bankruptcy settlement that would have protected members of the Sackler family from lawsuits related to the opioid epidemic. In a 5-4 ruling, justices found the settlement between Purdue Pharma and states, tribes, and local governments violates U.S. bankruptcy law by exempting the Sacklers from future litigation. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court's right-wing supermajority ruled in a 6-3 decision that the Securities and Exchange Commission cannot use administrative law judges to assign penalties to violators, who must instead be granted a jury trial. The ruling sets a precedent that severely curtails the power of the federal government to impose fines for violations across a range of agencies. In a scathing dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor called the ruling a power grab that will have momentous consequences. She wrote, quote, "The constitutionality of hundreds of statutes may now be in peril, and dozens of agencies could be stripped of their power to enforce laws enacted by Congress," she said. Also on Thursday, justices voted 5-4 to block the Environmental Protection Agency's Good Neighbor Plan, which allows the EPA to regulate air pollution that drifts across state lines. In a statement, Earth Justice wrote, quote, "The court's order puts thousands of lives at risk, forces downwind states to regulate their industries more tightly, and tells big polluters that it's open season on our environmental laws," Earth Justice said. In Texas, the former Uvalde school's police chief and another former officer have been indicted over their role in the botched response to the 2022 massacre at Robb Elementary School. Pete Arredondo, the former Uvalde school's police chief, and Adrian Gonzalez, a former officer, were charged Thursday with multiple counts of felony child endangerment and abandonment. Arredondo was fired 3 months after the mass shooting. 376 law enforcement officers responded to the mass shooting that day, but it took 77 minutes, well over an hour, for anyone to enter the classroom where the gunman was slaughtering children. 19 children were killed, as well as 2 teachers. Polls have opened in Iran, where voters will select a new president 1 month after Ebrahim Raisi died in a helicopter crash. There are 4 candidates on the ballot, all of them men qualified to run by Iran's Guardian Council. Some polls suggest voter turnout could be at a record low, below 50%, with voters still reeling from violent crackdown and widespread anti-government protests in 2022. The European Union's agreed to a long-term security agreement with Ukraine to provide military, financial, diplomatic, and humanitarian assistance. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed the deal Thursday during a visit to Brussels, where he met with European leaders Charles Michel and Ursula von der Leyen. Zelensky's trip came one day after the European Union formally opened accession talks with Ukraine and Moldova. The process of joining the EU could take years or even decades. Meanwhile, CNN's reporting the Biden administration's preparing to lift a de facto ban on Pentagon contractors deploying to Ukraine that's been in place since Russia's 2022 invasion. The policy shift would bring U.S. military personnel closer to a direct confrontation with Russia while speeding the work of technicians who maintain and repair U.S.-provided weapons, including F-16 fighter jets. And the United States Pacific Fleet played host Thursday as the world's largest maritime war games kicked off in Honolulu, Hawaii. The Rim of the Pacific, or RIMPAC, International Maritime Exercise brings together 25,000 military personnel from 29 countries, including Australia, Canada, South Korea, Japan, India, Brazil, Chile, Mexico, and 7 European nations. Israel will also be participating. Israel's inclusion has further angered peace activists who say there's a direct connection between Israel's assault on Gaza Gaza and the exploitation of Hawaiian lands by U.S. military. Rose Elevitz is with Jewish Voice for Peace, Hawaii.
Palestine is a weapons testing ground for Israeli weapons that are exported throughout the world to buyers like Japan, France, Brazil, Australia, and more, all of whom are active participants in this year's RIMPAC. Like Gaza, Hawaii too is a testing ground for weapons and trainings. The bombs that are tested in the sacred Makua Valley are the same bombs dropped in Gaza. The white phosphorus responsible for choking and burning innocent Palestinians to death is the same white phosphorus discharged in Makua.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The first 2024 presidential debate between President Biden and former President Trump was held Thursday night in Atlanta. It marked the first time a sitting president debated a former one. It also marked the two oldest candidates ever to run for president with a combined age of 159. And it was more of an incoherent debacle than any substantive debate. President Biden was halting and disjointed, hard to hear, often muffled his lines and appeared to lose his train of thought. Meanwhile, Trump repeatedly lied. His false claims not challenged by the CNN moderators Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. The debate covered a wide range of issues, from the economy and tax policy to immigration, reproductive rights, foreign policy, and more. Today, we'll play excerpts and get response from a round table of guests. Let's begin at the beginning. CNN moderator Jake Tapper opened the debate by citing high inflation and asking President Biden about the economy.
What do you say to voters who feel they are worse off under your presidency than they were under President Trump?
We got to take a look at what I was left when I became president, what Mr. Trump left me. We had an economy that was in free fall. The pandemic was so badly handled. Many people were dying. All he said was, it's not that serious. Just inject a little bleach into your arm. You'll be all right. The economy collapsed. There were no jobs. Unemployment rate rose to 15%. It was terrible. And so what we had to do is try to put things back together again. And that's exactly what we began to do. We created 15,000 new jobs. We brought out the position where we have 800,000 new manufacturing jobs. But there's more to be done. There's more to be done. Working class people are still in trouble. I come from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I come of household where the kitchen table, if the things weren't able to be met during the month, it was a problem. Price of eggs, the price of gas, the price of housing, the price of a whole range of things. That's why I'm working so hard to make sure I deal with those problems, that we're going to make sure that we reduce the price of housing. We're going to make sure we build 2 million new units. We're going to make sure we cap rents so corporate greed can't take over. The combination, what I was left with in corporate greed, is the reason why we're in this problem right now. In addition to that, we're in a situation where if you had to take a look at all that was done in his administration, he didn't do much at all. By the time he left, things were in chaos. Literally chaos. And so we put things back together. We created, I said, those jobs. We make sure we had a situation where we now, we brought down the price of prescription drugs, which is a major issue for many people, to $15 for a insulin shot as opposed to $400. No senior has to pay more than $200 for any drug, all the drugs they can include beginning next year. And the situation is, and we're going to make that available to everybody, to all Americans. So we're working to bring down the price of around the kitchen table, and that's what we're going to get done.
Thank you. President Trump?
We have the greatest economy in the history of our country. We have never done so well. Everybody was amazed by it. Other countries were copying us. We got hit with COVID. And when we did, we spent the money necessary so we wouldn't end up in a Great Depression, the likes of which we had in 1929. By the time we finished, so we did a great job. We got a lot of credit for the economy, a lot of credit for the military and no wars and so many other things. Everything was rocking good. But the thing we never got the credit for, and we should have, is getting us out of that COVID mess. He created mandates. That was a disaster for our country. But other than that, we had given them back a country where the stock market actually was higher than pre-COVID, and nobody thought that was even possible. The only jobs he created are for illegal immigrants and bounce back jobs, a bounce back from the COVID. He has not done a good job. He's done a poor job, and inflation's killing our country. It is absolutely killing us.
Those are the opening remarks by former President Trump and President Biden in their presidential debate last night. For more, we're joined by Norman Solomon, executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy and co-founder of RootsAction.org, which sponsors the Step Aside Joe campaign. His most recent book, War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine, joining us from San Francisco area. And joining us from Washington, D.C. is Chris Layman, D.C. Bureau Chief for The Nation. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Chris, let's begin with you. You've just finished your piece for The Nation, summarizing the debate. Your overall response?
Well, I think, you know, my overall response is, for once, pretty much in line with most Americans. Joe Biden really failed to rise to this moment. And it's important to remember this is a moment the Biden campaign aggressively helped shape. They wanted this debate early in the cycle so they could do something to jolt Biden's laggard approval numbers. They actually, you know, the failure of CNN to fact check Trump's many lies was part of the deal that the Biden campaign negotiated. They didn't want that kind of real-time scrutiny either. So it's a classic instance of be careful what you wish for. Biden, despite a week of solid preparation, was flustered. He was unable to complete thoughts. He delivered the, you know, already notorious line, "We finally beat Medicare," which furnished Trump instant ammunition to pounce and to lie and demagogue on the immigration issue, as in his view, it exerts a downward pull on social benefits like Medicare. So I expected nothing great, but it was so much worse than what I was preparing myself for.
So, Norman Solomon, as you viewed this, and then the commentary afterwards on the corporate networks, I don't think I've seen anything like the uniformity of opinion, where you had the Democrats and those sympathetic to them, not talking about Fox, of course, MSNBC and CNN, saying that their phones were blowing up with Democratic donors, with down balloters, people running down the ballot from the presidential ballot, of course, deeply concerned about Biden's health and what happened during this debate. You had Fox continually quoting MSNBC and CNN saying sort of, don't believe us. Listen to the commentators on these liberal networks going after Biden right now, saying he should step aside. This is something you have been talking about, though you certainly haven't been a supporter of President Trump. Can you respond to what happened last night?
What happened last night was a tremendous disaster for efforts to defeat Donald Trump. What happened was a complete catastrophe that befell but was self-inflicted by Biden. We should be super clear about this. Joe Biden showed without any doubt last night that he is clearly impaired. He is in no way up to the job of defeating Donald Trump. And in the history of presidential debates, no performance has ever come near being as disastrous as what Biden turned in. It was a gift to the extreme right wing. It was an enormous present that had a bow on it and then was unwrapped and handed over to the neo-fascist Republican Party. And what I think we have to look at now is the response from the Democratic Party establishment. We had, for instance, in the spin room last night after this disastrous debate, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, saying that Democrats are united fully behind President Biden. That's preposterous, and it would be a suicide politically for the Democratic Party to proceed that way. I think what we need to look at now is the imperative of a grassroots uprising from liberals, from progressives, from so-called moderates who don't want a return to four horrific years of Donald Trump that show all signs of being far worse than the previous 4 years with Trump. What is necessary is something called democracy, lowercase d, democratic activity, where people all around this country, starting today, calling upon anybody they have elected with a D after their name, a senator, a representative, demanding that they get real about where we are right now. Where we are right now is that unless very quickly we've got Joe Biden no longer at the top of this ticket or on the ticket of the Democratic Party, it is a gold-plated invitation to a victory, not only for Trump, but an entire extreme right-wing agenda. So I think we have to now organize swiftly. The crisis of the moment is extreme, and that calls upon us to end this pattern of Democrats in Congress serving as enablers for a president who absolutely is impaired and unable to get the job done to stop a fascist wave in this country.
I want to go right now to Biden and Trump. Right now, a clip of President Biden.
I want to give you an opportunity to respond to this question about the national debt.
He had the largest national debt of any president in a four-year period, number one. Number two, that $2 trillion tax cut benefited the very wealthy. What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America, billionaires in America. And what's happening? They're in a situation where they, in fact, pay 8.2% in taxes. If they just paid 24% or 25%, either one of those numbers, they'd raise $500 million, billion dollars, I should say, in a 10-year period. We'd be able to wipe out his debt. We'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with. Look, if we finally beat Medicare.
We finally beat Medicare, Norm Solomon. So what you had last night in the commentary after the debate is people reading the rules for what it would mean for delegates to be freed up at the Democratic convention. And again, this was not on Fox. This seemed to be the uniform, very little dissent on and the concern of Democratic senators and Congress members who you never hear stepping out of line now. Explain what that would look like. What would this mean? What are the rules?
Well, to solve this problem, we would need an immediate and drastic change for implanting backbones into the Democrats in the House and the Senate. It would be an extraordinary effort that would be necessary, most importantly, to get Biden to finally agree that he's not up to the job and to say that he's voluntarily going to be a one-term president. That is the clearest glide path to getting Biden out of the way so we have a chance to get an actual strong candidate in there to save the country and the world from Trump. If Biden isn't willing to do that, and I got to say he's been surrounded by sycophants and flunkies, not only in the White House and the Democratic National Committee, but in effect in Congress. If Biden's not willing to do that, then we need to have an enormous uprising. And as usual, it would start with and depend on organizing at the grassroots and insisting that power comes from the base of the Democratic Party, comes from people rather than elites deciding to do X, Y, Z. What that would look like is ultimately the Democratic National Committee would have to take this process in hand. And I got to say, Amy, you know, this is tremendously frustrating for many people, including me, because almost 2 years ago at Roots Action, we launched a Don't Run Joe campaign after he then went ahead and filed formally as a candidate. We just changed the name to Step Aside Joe. And more than a year ago, when we were putting ads in the Hill newspaper, full page ads telling members of Congress, it's time to step up, they've been entirely silent. So this would be a real change. It would be a virtual 180 that would be required unless Biden steps aside. And time is short. Unless Biden is willing to step down and say he's a one-term president on purpose, then we have to light a huge fire under these elected Democrats and the DNC, who are mostly, frankly, Democratic Party hacks, and say this is completely unacceptable. Get this guy out of there. We've got to stop Trump.
Norman Solomon is with the Institute for Public Accuracy, co-founder of RootsAction.org, which sponsors the Step Aside Joe campaign. Chris Layman is the D.C. bureau chief for The Nation, just out with a piece on last night's first presidential debate. We're going to continue this discussion with looking at Biden and Trump sparring over the economic record and inflation, addressing immigration and reproductive rights, as well as foreign policy. Stay with us.
So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. 'Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser.
The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. During Thursday night's debate, former President Trump slammed President Biden for causing inflation, allowing migrants to take, quote, black jobs.
President Biden, while black unemployment dropped to a record low under your presidency, black families still earned far less than white families. Black mothers are still three times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes, and black Americans are imprisoned at five times the rate of white Americans. What do you say to black voters who are disappointed that you haven't made more progress?
They acknowledge they made a lot of progress, number one. The fact of the matter is there's more small black businesses that have been started than any time in history. Number two, the wages of black unemployment is the lowest level it's been in a long, long time. Number three, we're finally providing housing for black Americans and dealing with the segregation that exists among these corporate corporations that collude to keep people out of their houses. And in addition to that, we find that the impact of on the choice that black families have to make relative to child care is incredibly difficult. When we did the first major piece of legislation in the past, I was able to reduce black child care costs. I cut them in half. We got to make sure we provide for child care costs. We got to make sure, because when you provide those child care protections, you increase economic growth because more people can be in the job market. So there's more to be done, considerably more to be done. But we've done a great deal so far, and I'm not letting up, and they know it.
You have 49 seconds left. What do you say to black voters who are disappointed with the progress so far?
I say I don't blame them for being disappointed. Inflation is still hurting them badly. For example, I provided for the idea that any black family, first-time home buyer, should get a $10,000 tax credit to be able to buy their first home so they can get started. I made sure that we're in a situation where all those black families and those black individuals who provided, had to take out student loans that were ballooning that if they were engaged in nursing, doctor, and anything having to do with volunteerism, if they paid their bills for 10 years on their student debt, all the rest is forgiven after 10 years. Millions have benefited from that. And we're going to do a whole lot more for black families.
Thank you, President Trump.
And he caused the inflation. He's blaming inflation, and he's right. It's been very bad. He caused the inflation, and it's killing black families and Hispanic families and just about everybody. It's killing